Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. It is the Weekly World View. I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as usual, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Yes, just glad to be here. I got a little bit distracted there. Hold on. Let me get back to myself here. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, I believe is how it goes. So glad to be here. You may have to leave the studio. Be distracted here. Sorry. Yes. Leave the studio. She has left for the moment. She will be back. So don't worry. But she can be quite a distraction sitting right here next to me. So it throws me off. I hope everybody's doing wonderfully well out there. We're doing good here at the McBurney compound. Glad to have you on board. Going to jump right into the news, I suppose. I've always wondered about people living in Montana. Now, I know some folks from Montana, fine folks up there, by the way. But I've always wondered, it takes a really hardy type of soul to live way up there in Montana. But I found a reason in the news recently why one might want to consider moving to Montana. Got a story here from NBC, Dateline Whitehall, Montana. Two Whitehall residents say they're finding gold flakes in their tap water. Now, there's a reason to move to Montana. I mean, you hear the fracking stories, right? People with the gas coming out of their water and the smells coming out of their tap and all that. Well, here they claim they're finding gold flakes in their tap water and also in the toilet tank. The toilet tank? Well, if I found gold flakes coming out of my tap water, I would be searching every water source in the house, including climbing into the toilet tank if necessary, even into the bowl if necessary. The folks reporting that they're finding these gold flakes, Mark Brown and his wife Sharon, they said they were just washing the dishes when she noticed there were glistening and gleaming little flecks in the bottom of the basin. So they ran multiple tests on the flakes and found gold. Yeah, they did the old acid test, as it were, and it proved that, in fact, there's gold in that there tap water, by golly. Now, there is an open-pit gold mine within about 5 miles of Whitehall, but officials there say there's no reason to believe that the gold flakes are coming from that open-pit mine, and so perhaps we'll have to make a jaunt up to Whitehall, Montana, and find out what's going on up there. I've been to Whitefish, Montana. Fine town, beautiful town, stunning lake views. I went up there in the wintertime. Maybe we should visit Montana this summer. I know we were planning that big trip to North Dakota, but maybe Montana's in the cards. Yep, all right. Well, that's it. That's all I have on that story. There's no moral to the story. There's just gold in the toilet tank, in the tap. So good for them. I am happy for Mark and Sharon Brown up there in Montana. That's awesome. Now we move on to more disturbing news. We go to reason number 774, to keep or get your children out of the government schools. This is from Breitbart. This is from Maryland. Thursday morning passed. A teacher went to one of his students' homes, and he wanted to speak with the 14-year-old girl's father. I apologize. 15-year-old female student. Teacher went to her house wanting to speak with her father. Well, the girl's father told the teacher he didn't want to speak to him and told him to leave, but the teacher refused. And so the girl's father grabbed a baseball bat and struck the teacher with said baseball bat, according to Breitbart. Yes. The teacher, oddly enough, says he does not want to pursue charges against the father who struck him with a baseball bat. And one might ask oneself, why not? He hits you with a baseball bat? Wouldn't you want to pursue charges? Well, it turns out that the teacher apparently had had quite a texting interaction with the 15-year-old female student. Police looked at a series of texts from the 42-year-old male teacher to the 15-year-old female student. And while they can't say that a crime was committed, they did say that the text messages described an inappropriate emotional relationship between the grown man and the teenage girl at the government school. And they have turned over the text messages to the Crimes Against Children Unit for further investigation. So reason number 774 to keep your daughter, particularly, out of the government schools, because she may be seduced and then molested by teachers. Could happen. Absolutely. A much greater chance of your child being morally defiled by their teachers than being actually shot at school or killed or physically injured. Yes, much greater chance for emotional, spiritual damage to be done to your child. So there we have it. And that was somewhere in Maryland, the government schools in Maryland. We move immediately then to reason number 775, to keep or get your children out of the government schools. This is from Fox in D.C. Washington, D.C.'s largest public high school held its annual Gay Pride event this past week. Well, right there is enough. Need I go on? Well, so that's reason number 775. But let me get to reason number 776. I'm updating the spreadsheet as I read. It was at Woodrow Wilson High School at the Gay Pride event that Principal Peter Cahill came out as a homosexual on stage in front of all the kids at the school. And there were the school body erupted in cheers when their principal announced. He said, quote, this is what he said on the dais. The mayor was standing next to him, and he said, quote, Mayor Gray, I want to say publicly for the first time that because of your leadership, care, and support, that I am a proud gay man who just happens to be the principal of Woodrow Wilson High School. I turned 50 just a couple of weeks ago, and it was just something I'm tired of hiding. Unquote. And the students erupted in cheers. That's what it says. It says he came out to cheers from the students. Yeah. Cahill, the principal of the school, decided to make his announcement at his school's second annual LGBT Pride event. I know. This isn't the first time this has happened. We got reason 775, 76, and 77. Update that spreadsheet. we have more from the principal. He says it seemed like the perfect place and time to come out in front of all the kids at school, in public, standing next to the mayor. Tell me the world has not gone utterly insane. And, of course, he got cheered, so he's been his suspicion that this was the perfect time and place to come out has apparently been confirmed. Cahill said, quote, if I was going to stand up in front of these kids today celebrating our pride and saying you can be who you are, I would be a hypocrite if I decided to hide who I am. Which is a proud gay man. Not just a gay man. A proud gay man. That's the problem with the homosexuals. Is that they're no longer just homosexuals. They're proud homosexuals. And they're sauntering and announcing and coming out in front of innocent children who, frankly, there shouldn't even be a discussion about anything sexual ever at all in front of kids. Especially not your own kids. I'm not saying parents shouldn't discuss sex with their kids at some point. I'm just saying that the public, the kids shouldn't go in public and hear about sex at all. That's my position. The mayor followed Cahill on the dais and spoke out with a message of support saying, I want to congratulate you on making that announcement. He then as he proposed and asked him to marry him. The mayor did. All right, I made that up. The mayor says he didn't know that the principal was going to announce he was a homo until he got there. He said he had to tear up all his notes. He was going to make a flowery speech filled with platitudes that mayors typically make in front of high school kids. But instead, he had to follow the guy who comes out as a flaming queer in front of all the kids. Fox News reports, Fox DC, I should say, reports that students, both gay and straight, applauded their principal, knowing that coming out that way wasn't an easy decision. Oh, really? Well, it seems like it's getting easier and easier, is all I'm going to say. Okay? I mean, if you're a half-baked basketball player who can't get signed, well, just come out as a homosexual. Improve your chances of getting signed. If you come out as a homosexual as a principal of the school, the mayor will follow you and say how wonderful you are. So how hard was it? Wasn't an easy decision. It's getting easier and easier, by golly. Cahill, he listened to what the principal said about his life growing up. He said, growing up, the word gay wasn't even allowed to be mentioned, much less think about or talk about. Unquote. So Cahill grew up in a normal world where you didn't talk about things like that. And normal people assume that you weren't even thinking about things like that. But now he comes out proud and public in front of an auditorium full of impressionable young high school students. And there you have reasons 775, 776, and 777 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. And now here we have reason number one, not to start a small business in America. Reason number one, Dateline Denver from CBS, the owner of the Paradise Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado, says he will no longer sell wedding cakes after the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ruled that he discriminated against a homosexual couple when he refused to sell them a cake. That's right. Jack Phillips, Masterpiece Cake Shop, says he doesn't believe in homosexual marriage and he refused to sell the two queers a cake for their wedding. And he actually admitted, that he had refused other homosexual couples to make a cake for them for their alleged weddings. Well, there was his mistake, admitting not only that he did it once, but that he's done it before. He's a serial discriminator. He discriminates. He says, Jack Phillips says he would close down the bakery before he would compromise on his beliefs. He did say that he's got a lot of business because of all the publicity. Now he's making baked goods for normal people at a rate that allowed him to drop the whole wedding cake portion of his business. He just stopped making wedding cakes altogether. Well, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission has also ordered Mr. Phillips to submit quarterly reports about the customers he refuses to serve and retrain his employees to serve everyone. Who's not wearing the ribbon? Is he not wearing the ribbon? Is that right? You not going to wear the ribbon? Who's not wearing the ribbon? Yeah. So reason number one, not to start a small business in America, you will bow your knee to the homosexualist god, the homosexualist idol, or you'll be driven out of business. Now, this fella, Jack Phillips, I like this fella. He seems like my kind of guy. He thinks that he's got a workaround here and that he doesn't have to make wedding cakes at all. But I predict that he will be compelled by the state at some point in the not-too-distant future to make a wedding cake for a homosexual couple. And, of course, Bob Enyart has predicted on his show that should he decide not to make a cake, that he may be forced to actually propose to another man. That's right. He may be forced to participate in a homosexual wedding if he doesn't acquiesce and bake them a cake. He's got to wear the ribbon. As for the pair of Massachusetts homosexuals who were getting married in Massachusetts and then they decided to defile the state of Colorado with their perverted, disgusting homosexual wedding reception. As for the pair of queers from Massachusetts, they said they always believed they were in the right. They said, we were discriminated against there. We were treated badly. But the next time a gay couple wanders in there asking for a wedding cake, they won't have the experience we have. They'll have a responsible experience. And they'll leave feeling respected. Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and I'm not sure why playing a Rush song after a story about a lisping, dripping pair of homosexuals seems appropriate. Anyway. Oh, I see. If you choose not to bake a cake, you still are not wearing the ribbon. You still have made a choice. He will be held responsible. So I was informed during the break by my extremely attractive audio engineer that I had already talked about this story last week, and she was looking into my eyes, holding up, like, how many fingers am I holding up? Are you okay? Wondering if perhaps it's early stage Alzheimer's. And that's not the case. I simply couldn't resist updating the story when I had the opportunity to do all that lisping and make fun of the homosexual. I couldn't resist. Couldn't help myself. But it could be early stage Alzheimer's. I tell you what, I have a number of friends who are getting older, and it seems to me that they're losing their minds. And every once in a while, I catch myself, and I think, are you going crazy? Is it possible that you can't remember what happened 30 seconds ago? Is that really possible? It's really weird. I don't know if it's something in the water. I don't know if it's the breakdown of our genetics, but I and everyone I know seems a lot stupider than my grandparents. That's all. I know. Maybe it's the smartphones. It's the internet. It's the contrails. Maybe it's the... Maybe it was the fact that I was vaccinated as a child. I don't know. But something's happened. And we all seem to be deteriorating rapidly, which is why we have to be on guard and be careful about what you put into your head. And which is why I encourage you to tune in, to the Weekly Worldview every week. Speaking of being careful of what you put in your head, we go to Waukesha, Wisconsin. The heartland. Yeah. Two 12-year-old Waukesha, Wisconsin girls have been charged as adults with attempted first-degree homicide. Their victim was another 12-year-old from Waukesha. The two girls stabbed their friend, at least their acquaintance, stabbed her 19 times and left her for dead in the woods. She managed to crawl after regaining consciousness to the edge of the street where she was found by a passerby. And at last report, she is expected to recover. All three girls attended Horning Middle School in Waukesha. One of the girls told the police that an online character called Slender Man is the leader of Creepypasta, an online website, a compendium of horror stories directed apparently at the youth. And in the hierarchy of that online world, one must kill to show dedication to this particular character. The one girl said the other told her they should become proxies of Slender Man and kill their friend to prove themselves worthy of him. And apparently this would eventually reveal that this online character really did exist. They were going to kill the girl and then walk to his house in the woods. So this website, this Creepypasta website, it's still up. I was checking it just before the show. It's still up. It's online. And as far as I could tell, there was no mention of the actual murder associated with this website. So speaking of having no shame, you would think that the organizers of the website would be so horrified by the fact that some of their readers participated in murder that they would at least acknowledge it somewhere on the website. So the warning to parents that JS Online, the website where I download, they say parents have to be careful about keeping track of what kids are doing on their iPhone and their iPad. The iPads that the two students used to follow Creepypasta and the Slender Man online, the iPads were issued to them by Horning Middle School, with full access to the entire internet world for the students. So I suppose this could be reason number 778 to get or keep your kids out of government schools as well. It's just a horrifying story. I read this story and I'm thinking, I have a 12-year-old. I have a 12-year-old who's going on 13 soon. Is it possible that she could conceive in her mind to murder another person? Well, of course it's possible. You give a kid an iPad and let them start reading horror stories online. And, you know, before you know it, well, you just never know what could happen. Horrible things. These two girls thought they had murdered this girl when they left her in the woods. But the online horror world just continues to turn, unflinching and unaffected, apparently, by the fact that this happened. All right. From there, what's the moral to the story? Well, I mean, to say that you need to keep tabs on what your kids are doing online seems to me to be an understatement. You need to raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Teach them that there is a right and wrong, that there is a creator, and that there is a judge to whom they will be accountable one day. And that they are fallen, and that they are sinful, but that there is a Savior. And then you don't have to worry as much about what they view and process online. You still have to restrict access to the internet, obviously. But that's certainly not the first piece of advice I would be offering parents. Now we move to, Breitbart's Big Government page reports that the son of imprisoned Philadelphia abortion doctor Kermit Gosnell has been shot several times by a homeowner during an alleged home invasion. Gosnell's 22-year-old son, Baron Alexander, was allegedly burglarizing a home shared by a group of undergraduates in West Philadelphia on the morning of June 4th. He broke into the house. Three male residents were at home at the time, and as he was taking items from the property, one of the residents woke up, startled, and shot him multiple times. He's rushed to the hospital in critical but stable condition. At last report, apparently he will survive. Just an interesting aside on a child brought up by a mass murderer ends up a petty criminal and, oddly enough, is shot multiple times by an undergraduate student as he's burgling the apartment. I don't know that there's any moral to this or any bigger, greater meaning other than don't be a mass murderer. Your child could be negatively affected, I guess. You know, this child, Baron Alexander, I shouldn't say child, he's 22 years old, but there was a chance to teach him an important lesson about justice by executing his father recently, but that didn't happen. And so young Baron, just as confused as the rest of us by the justice system, ends up a petty thief, gets himself shot. A sad story all the way around. I can imagine those undergrads had to clean up a lot of blood in the apartment. That couldn't have been pleasant. So we feel for them. Maybe we should start a fund to help the undergrads clean their carpet. Yeah, we don't support undergrads anyways. Maybe 2 out of 1,000 undergrads we would support in any way. All right, now, we're going to delve in to the science, really, file. Now, this is real science, and it's somewhat disturbing, but also quite interesting. The Associated Press reports from London that Britain's fertility regulator says controversial techniques to create embryos from the DNA of 3 people do not appear to be unsafe. When I first saw the headline, making embryos from 3 people, well, I thought Frankenstein and just all kinds of strange things. I had to read the story. Well, the techniques that are being tested on animals, these are lab tests on animals at this point, techniques are meant to stop mothers from passing on potentially fatal genetic diseases to their babies and involve altering the human egg or embryo before transferring it into a woman's womb. Critics have described the research as unethical and warned that the novel technology has unknown dangers. The Center for Genetics and Society in America warned that allowing embryos to be created this way might lead to a slippery slope and tempt scientists and parents to use the techniques to create designer babies with certain traits. But experts say that if approved, these new methods would likely be used in about a dozen British women every year who are known to have faulty mitochondrial DNA, which is the energy-producing structures outside a cell's nucleus. Defects in, now here we get down to it, defects in the mitochondria's genetic code can result in diseases such as muscular dystrophy, heart problems, mental retardation. So the techniques involve removing the nucleus DNA from the egg of a prospective mother and inserting it into a donor egg where the nucleus DNA has been removed. And that can be done either before or immediately after fertilization. The resulting embryo would end up with the nucleus DNA from its parents, but the mitochondrial DNA from the donor. And the donor DNA would amount to less than 1% of the resulting embryo's genes. But the change will be passed on to future generations, which scientists say is a major genetic modification that we just don't understand all the ramifications of what we might be getting ourselves into in doing such a thing. On its face, I would not reject this immediately. I would not reject this as unethical. I think it's worthy of study. It seems to me to be an effort to reduce disease, genetically inherited disease, and I think that's admirable. Now, the fact that this could lead to a slippery slope and tempt scientists and parents to use the technique to create designer babies, well, that's already happening in vitro fertilization. It's already happening in selective abortions, sex-selective abortions. So we're already gone down the slippery slope, and any good technology and any medical advancement could be misused for nefarious and even evil and wicked purposes. So I wouldn't reject it on that basis. And I would say that at this point, if it's lab tests on animals, I think it's worthy of further study, and I wouldn't reject it out of hand. And I think that the statement making embryos from three people is a bit much, designed probably to attract readers to click through on the link, more so than accurately describing what's going on here. But anyway, I'm open to debate on that, and if you want to criticize or chastise me, please send me an email, because we don't take calls here at the Weekly Worldview, as you already know. But we do appreciate you listening, and if you do send me an email, there's a good chance I'll respond. Oh, by the way, I had to respond to this email that was sent to me by Tom, a listener in, well, I think he's in Michigan, but I don't think, we'll call him Tom in parts unknown. He says, Doug, I was calling HGTV, Homo and Gay TV, at least a year before you ever uttered that phrase on your show. I demand proper credit. And at this, I want to, right now, I want to give Tom, in parts unknown, credit for coming up with the term Homo and Gay TV. Although I don't think I heard it directly from Tom, but there's a chance I did, and that I just plagiarized it unconsciously. Again, another sign of early stage Alzheimer's, or the fact that all of our genes are falling apart faster than we can keep track. Doug McBurney here, your humble host. So glad to have you. As I'm slowly losing my mind, I'm certain that I am going to go crazy if I live long enough. It's bound to happen. Yes.
Right.
I will go crazy. So I was actually having a conversation with a friend. I can't remember if it was at church this morning or if it was.
Doing that on
I don't recall who it was or when, but we both agreed that we'd prefer to die or younger rather than go insane and embarrass ourselves.
Really?
Yes. Of course, that's what we say now.
Yeah.
It might be a lot more. It might be a lot more attractive to slip into insanity slowly the closer I get to it, if I'm not there already. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to remind my extremely attractive audio engineer that our youngest daughter, the other day we were driving in the car, and a song by Rush came on the radio. And our youngest asked, "Is that a boy or a girl, Daddy?" I said, "Well, you need to listen to some of his more recent recordings because he doesn't hit those notes anymore." Anyway, just to recap on the whole Rush situation. All right. Now, let's jump into the science. Really? File. Insurance companies. Yes, insurance companies, which I am fundamentally against. I don't believe in insurance. I wish I didn't have to buy it. I wish we could all just be honest with each other. And everyone didn't have to be so afraid of getting ripped off that they had to buy insurance. I wish everybody was trustworthy. Well, that's the way it'll be in the kingdom of heaven. There won't be any insurance. Because if you have a fender bender, both parties will agree mutually to take care of it. And everybody will be much more well-adjusted. A lot less insanity in the kingdom. Did I say the kingdom of heaven? I meant the kingdom of God on earth. Is what I meant. I know splitting theological hairs, perhaps, but the kingdom of Jesus Christ on earth, the thousand-year millennial kingdom, there will be no insurance. That's my prediction. But insurance companies, according to NBC, are beginning to file lawsuits against small towns and cities who they say haven't prepared for the floods and storms related to climate change that will cost the insurance companies billions of dollars. An unprecedented lawsuit against the city of Chicago and its suburbs for failing to prepare for heavy rains that the insurance company claimed were fueled by global warming was filed in the last couple months here. The message for governments from the insurance companies is this: prepare now for climate change or pay the price. Now, the lawsuit was withdrawn when the government agreed to knuckle under and put together a plan for the Chicagoland area to deal with rising sea levels and increased rain and stronger storms and all the horrible things associated with climate change and global warming is terrible. Cubs win! Cubs win! It's a home run! I slipped into Harry Carey there, see? I might need to be put into a home. I slipped right into Harry Carey just because it's a Chicago story. Anyway, back to the serious news of the day here. So you've got young lawyers associated with the insurance companies who are dyed-in-the-wool, diehard believers in global warming. I mean, there are now lawyers who have grown up in the government education system who've been brainwashed their whole lives, and they believe this stuff is true. And NBC reports that this lawsuit filed against Chicago was the first shot in what could be a long-term set of litigation battles over failure to prepare for climate change. That's a quote from a Columbia University professor. Probably a law professor. I'm a law professor from Columbia. Get in line. Yeah, it was the Farmers Insurance Company. They brought the case, and then they dropped the case. But it looks just like a threat, basically. A shot across the bow of municipalities across the country that insurance companies are preparing to mitigate the losses that the leftists are no doubt going to credit global warming with. And the insurance companies don't want to absorb any losses. Their whole job is to mitigate losses. So that if they can blame climate change and the municipality's failure to properly prepare for climate change, you can bet they got a lawyer that'll write a motion just like that. We'll bring a case. Yeah, absolutely. Climate, they weren't prepared. All right. Farmer's decision to pull the case less than 2 months after filing may signal that the insurer has shifted its approach and that the lawsuit was really just a way of raising awareness of the issue among cities. Yeah, raising awareness. When a lawyer files a lawsuit, yeah, he is definitely trying to raise awareness. Everybody becomes acutely aware. And you have to start thinking like a lawyer, and it's enough to drive a normal person insane. Yeah, so there. You know what? I bet we can measure I bet there is a measurable and statistically significant relationship between the onset of insanity or Alzheimer's disease and the number of lawsuits one has participated in. The more lawsuits, the earlier you lose your mind. If you've never had a lawsuit or never interfaced with a lawyer in any way, you'll probably live to be 96 years old and be able to do Chinese arithmetic with your eyes closed. Interact with one lawyer, you probably took 10 years off your life, you've lost at least 20 IQ points, and you've tumbled down 6 steps closer to insanity. I don't know, it just sounds hard, Chinese arithmetic.
It's the same.
Sounds difficult.
Anywhere.
It's the same? Are numbers the same in Japanese and Chinese? Really? All right, I'll have to make a note of that. Arithmetic is the same in Chinese. Huh. Okay, I'll take a note of that. Now, further into the science, really, file. From the L.A. Times, after a relatively quiet period of seismic activity in the L.A. area, the last 5 months have been marked with 5 earthquakes larger than a 4.0, and that hasn't occurred since 94, the year of the destructive North Ridge earthquake. Earthquake experts say 2014 is clearly a year of increased seismic activity. And they say that the chance that we'll have a bigger earthquake this year is more than if we hadn't had this cluster of earthquakes. Every earthquake, according to experts at the U.S. Geological Survey, every earthquake makes another earthquake more likely. Now, that's just a scary statement to think about, especially if you live in Southern California. Now, earthquakes are terrifying. I read another article. I couldn't find it again, but a fellow actually predicted a couple of dates this year when the big one, maybe not the big one, but when a big earthquake will strike in L.A., and he said it would be dusk to dawn, and I believe he had a date in June, and I believe he had another date in July. Unfortunately, I lost that story. But he said that earthquakes are directly related to the tides and the moon, and that if we would just spend more time and money focusing on predicting earthquakes, that instead of wasting and squandering all this money on global climate change, now I said that, not him, and non-existent AIDS research and all the other bogus areas where money is being squandered in quantum physics and everything else. If we would focus on trying to figure out earthquakes, he thinks we could do it, that we could actually predict them, prepare for them, and actually evacuate before they happen. It's a great article. I got to try to find that. That just came to my mind that I had read that and lost it. Did it come to my mind? Maybe, maybe not. Am I actually here? Ah, no, I think I am. So I'm not that far gone. But all this seismic activity out in Los Angeles has experts worried. The cluster of quakes, this most recent cluster, shows that seismic activity under the Santa Monica Mountains is increasing. And one seismologist says that the mountains were formed by earthquake activity over millions of years. Millions and millions of years. Ah, so I see. That's why this made it into the science, really, file. Because the rest of this story seems completely rational and reasonable and sane, even. Even clinically accurate. Scientifically accurate. Mathematically accurate. But I don't know what leads this person to believe that these mountains were formed by earthquake activity over millions of years. I got to see a small portion of the new video being released by Bob Enyart soon. called The Global Flood and the Hydroplate Theory. And the explanation for how the mountains formed is so stunning as to be virtually irrefutable. It is absolutely stunning, Walt Brown's explanation for the formation of mountain ranges around the world. Now, you'll have to get the video to find out the details, but I will give you one preview. It did not take millions of years. No. that's all I'm going to say on that. Anyway, I earthquakes scare me almost as much as tornadoes. And tornadoes are much more likely out here in Colorado. So I'm scared of tornadoes and I'm scared of earthquakes. And I think instead of studying global warming and the inflation theory around the Big Bang and all the other places where grant money is being squandered by fools and children, we should be looking to be able to predict tornadoes and earthquakes and hurricanes. I'll throw in hurricanes and typhoons as well. That seems to me to be a much better place to spend that money, frankly. All right, now we dive into the philosophy. Really? File. It's a new file. Derived from the science. Really? File. It's philosophy. Really? And, of course, this would go to Richard Dawkins. A story about Richard Dawkins. He was appearing at the Cheltenham Science Festival in Great Britain. And he said that it's rather pernicious to instill in a child the view that the world is shaped by supernaturalism. I'll read that in English. He said that it is rather pernicious to instill in a child the view that the world is shaped by supernaturalism. In other words, to teach a child that God created the heavens and the earth, he says that's pernicious. Yeah, that's Richard Dawkins. He's a world-famous atheist. Yeah. Mr. Dawkins, and I know you're a scientist, and I barely made it out of high school. Barely. But I would say that the opposite has been proven true. The opposite has been proven true, Mr. Dawkins, empirically and scientifically, from the fascists to the communists to the next mass murderer, instilling in a child a view that the world is purely natural, to me, has been proven pernicious. Scientifically, I don't even think it can be argued with. I know everybody, they bring up the Crusades, they bring up the Salem witch trials. Okay, well, that's all you got. What about the tens of millions slaughtered by the naturalist Darwinian atheists, of which Mr. Dawkins counts himself one? The Weekly Worldview, welcome back. Round and third and heading for home. And, I wasn't quite finished with that Dawkins story. That's okay. I appreciate the musical interlude because it gives me time to gather my thoughts as my mind slowly flees away from reality. Where was I? Oh, Dawkins, not only is he upset about parents who instill in their child a view that the world is shaped by supernaturalism, but he says Even fairy tales, the ones we all love, about witches and wizards and princes turning into frogs, well, there's a very interesting reason why a prince could not turn into a frog. It's statistically too improbable, says Richard Dawkins. I pulled this story off of Breitbart, and as I finished the story, I was down reading in some of the comments, and one creationist took issue with this statistically improbable statement, and the creationist said, unguided Darwinian evolution is also too statistically improbable, Mr. Dawkins, at which some atheist posted, do you have evidence for that, or are you just spouting it? And then this creationist posted, I wish I was smart enough to understand it, but he basically posted the mathematical definition of impossible. And it's like 10 to the 40th, I can't remember. I'm not a mathematician. But anyway, he posted a number of scientific calculations, and he said, yes, here's my evidence. And here are the researchers who've looked at the problem, secular researchers. And they found that the chances of a protein forming are approximately 10 to the greater than 10 to the 600th. Anyway, it was quite an impressive thrust and parry by the creationists there on Breitbart. I wish I knew who that fellow was. I wouldn't mind having a cup of coffee and just chatting with him. It was beautiful. Professor Dawkins was also asked whether he thought parents who teach their children religion are subjecting them to child abuse. Dawkins says, well, when you tell a child to mind their P's and Q's or otherwise they'll roast in hell, well, that is tantamount to child abuse, he says. Yeah. Dawkins' book, we're reminded by Breitbart, The Selfish Gene, revolutionized evolutionary biology. And he also, Mr. Dawkins freely admits that his reputation as a militant atheist may overshadow his scientific work, but he said his views are unlikely to change. Oh yeah, you want to bet, Dick? I bet they do change. Yes, on Judgment Day, Dick Dawkins' opinions will change dramatically. Uh-huh. And that's a high statistical probability, Dick. Okay? I can't wait. That'll be fun to see Richard Dawkins on Judgment Day. Well, you know, those of us who are, you know, chatty with him, chummy, we just call him Dick. Anyway, your opinion will change, Mr. Dawkins. So we'll just see about that, indeed. All right, so that I did last week. See, I am going insane. I have a story here I did last week. I marked it all up to do it again this week. All right, yep. Just put me in a straitjacket now and set me up in a retirement home before I go crazy. Into the war file we go. John F. Kerry, the Secretary of State, in an interview was unequivocal when discussing the Obama administration's commitment to monitoring the five Taliban figures exchanged for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. All right, now here's where I have to admit that I was falling down. It seems last week, last Sunday when I went to air, the only person who had remembered less about Bo Bergdahl than me was Barack Obama. He's the only person who knew less about Bo Bergdahl than I did last Sunday. I think I reported on Bergdahl as a deserter 4 years ago, maybe. But I had forgotten who the guy was. So what can I say? I apologize. Refer to the earlier segment in the broadcast where I talk about insanity and the breakdown of our genetics. Okay? Please forgive me. I forgot that Bergdahl was a deserter. That's why I said I was happy that he was freed. And I guess I'm still happy he's freed. Even a deserter doesn't deserve to be held in a cage in Pakistan. But certainly not a hero. He is the poster child now for our They Are Not All Heroes file, Bo Bergdahl. Yes. But John Kerry says, regarding the five Taliban warlords, basically, that were released, Kerry says, quote, I'm not telling you that they don't have some ability at some point to return to the fight, but they also have an ability to get killed doing that. And I don't think anybody should doubt the capacity of the United States of America to protect Americans. He gave the interview Ironically enough, just a few miles from the Normandy beach on the 70th anniversary of D-Day, where he praised Barack Obama's decision to swap five Taliban for one traitor. Did I say traitor? I'm sorry. I meant deserter. So that's ironic. And it's dark and black to think of John Kerry defending Barry so close to the shores of Normandy. Anyway, it just sent a chill up my spine to think about Normandy being defiled by the presence of these traitors. John Kerry and Barack Obama are traitors. And this release of these five top Taliban generals, or whatever they are, Taliban leaders, listen to who one of these Taliban leaders, who they released, listen to who this guy is. Taliban forces, this is from the Wall Street Journal. Taliban forces led by Mohammed Fazal swept through a village on the Shomali Plain north of Kabul in 1999 in a scorched earth offensive that prompted some 300,000 people to flee for their lives. The villages of Shomali were once the orchard of central Afghanistan, and the plain's carefully tended vineyards were famous for their grapes. But when the Taliban seized control from the Northern Alliance in 1999, they systematically demolished entire villages, blowing up houses, burning fields, and seeding them with landmines. Mohammed Fazal played a major role in this destruction, and the Wall Street Journal reports that the people who dwell right now in the Shomali Valley are terrified. They're terrified that this modern incarnation of Genghis Khan is going to return and raise their villages and rape their women and rob their and kidnap their children and butcher their young men, that it's all going to happen again because the Barry and Kerry show have released Mohammed Fazal back into humanity, a status to which Mr. Mohammed Fazal is not worthy. He is not worthy to dwell among other human beings. He should be exterminated with the utmost prejudice immediately. Guantanamo Bay. 13 years they held to hold these guys in jail. These guys should have been dead. I think I already said that. I'll leave that aside. On to the politics file. A prominent psychotherapist, Gina Loudon. Are you familiar with Mrs. Loudon? No, I'm not. I'm not familiar with very many psychotherapists at all, though. So she could very well be prominent, and I've just never heard of her, because that's not a circle that I observe regularly. Anyway, the allegedly prominent psychotherapist, this is from WorldNet Daily, Gina Loudon, told Lou Dobbs that Bo Bergdahl's anti-American rhetoric doesn't suggest someone suffering from torture or even Stockholm syndrome, but rather the mind of a man whose thinking had been twisted long before his capture by the aforementioned vicious Taliban. She also suggested that President Obama may relate to Bergdahl's anti-colonialist rantings. And that could be why Bo Bergdahl was such an important figure for Barack Obama. Apparently, Barry's been obsessed with getting Bo Bergdahl away from the Taliban for several years now. And it could be because they agree on their anti-American rantings and ravings. So Lou Dobbs asked Loudon why Obama would trade five terrorists for Bergdahl, a fellow who was suspected of deserting his unit, but not even speak about the imprisonment of the decorated Marine Andrew Tamarisi, who sits in jail in Mexico for inadvertently crossing the border with a gun in his vehicle. Barry hasn't said a word about this Marine who's sitting in Mexican jail while he talks about our sacred what did he call it? The talking point was went across all platforms. Our sacred obligation to never leave an American, unless it's September 11, 2012, never to leave an American, unless it's in Benghazi, happens to be the ambassador, and you happen to be partying or whatever. Otherwise, we have a sacred obligation. I heard sacred obligation at least five times from five different other hacks. Obama hacks, as they were trying to explain this. What does she say? So Dobbs asks her, why does Obama talk about a sacred obligation here but not for Sergeant Tamarisi in the Mexican jail? And the psychotherapist says, quote, "I am very, very concerned about the mental stability of the president at this point. Some of his behavior seems irrational. It seems beyond that of just a typical narcissistic, arrogant, sort of I'm the leader of a big country and I feel tyrannical at the moment kind of attitude." She says, "It really seems to me like this president is demonstrating behavior that is not only anti-American, but irrational and erratic, and perhaps not exactly what we might deem sane." I believe she's implied that the president is insane. What's that? All right, I like her for a psychotherapist. I was getting ready to kind of make fun of her, but, you know, but she might, oh, she's prominent in my mind now anyway, because she is. Why? Well, because she agrees with me. All right, is there anything else? Let's see, we're almost at the end here. Oh, well, we're actually out of time, but since I control all time and space, at least in my own fragile psyche, we'll just continue on. The Israelis are extremely disappointed with Barack Obama. Their ambassador has said that he's deeply disappointed that Barry and Kerry have decided to negotiate with the interim technocratic government that includes Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah and the terrorist organization Hamas. Some lawmakers in America are so upset. One, Eric Cantor, he's so upset that he's called for a suspension in the millions of dollars of welfare we give to the Philistines. I mean, the Palestinians. Eric Cantor's so upset, he's thinking maybe we'll choke off a little bit of the welfare that we bribed the Philistines with. Unbelievable. That's just awful. North Korea has detained another American citizen. There are now three U.S. citizens detained in North Korea by the madman, Kim Jong-un. I haven't heard about our sacred obligation to Americans who are tossed into hellhole prisons from the president or the Secretary of State, but I'm sure that's forthcoming. This latest American was detained for having left a Bible in his hotel room. Yep, that's right. He left a Bible in a hotel room, and that's a crime in North Korea, and now he's in prison, and he has not heard from the president nor the Secretary of State. Does the State Department have any comment? A State Department official says there's no greater priority for us than the welfare and safety of U.S. citizens abroad. Can I get a highball over here? Yeah, and bring some chips and salsa. Boko Haram, while we've all been focusing on Bo Bergdahl and whether or not he's a deserter and all that, and as well we should, but while that's been going on, Boko Haram has slaughtered hundreds of people when men wearing military fatigues and carrying weapons showed up in pickup trucks. Villagers thought the Nigerian army had finally come to protect them from Boko Haram, but it was a disguise. Boko Haram militants slaughtered hundreds of people in three villages. Yeah. These are the same group that you remember kidnapped more than 300 schoolgirls, and the liberals and Michelle Obama were falling all over themselves to tweet their way to rescue. And now they've been utterly forgotten by the global community because neither Putin nor Obama nor anyone else had the intestinal fortitude to take a stand and go and slaughter these Islamists and get these girls back. Embarrassing. Yeah, this tactic of dressing up as a military was the same tactic Boko Haram used to kidnap the girls. Militants forced everyone in the village into the village centers. And then they began to shout Allahu Akbar, and then they started to fire indiscriminately into the crowds. Continuously for a very long time until all who had gathered there were dead. That's what's been going on in that part of the world. The Chinese military is expanding at a rapid, astonishing rate. Beijing is growing the size and reach of its naval fleet, advancing its air force, and testing a host of new missiles. This is according to a Pentagon report. This is what the Pentagon is willing to admit to. This isn't what some guy, the counterpart of Winston Churchill in 1936. There's someone like Winston Churchill. Back in the 30s, Winston Churchill was meticulously cataloging his opinions about how many tanks and planes and ships the Germans were building. And everyone laughed at him and said he was crazy. Well, someone in America, there's someone in a basement office somewhere in the Pentagon who is the progeny of Winston Churchill, and they're actually categorizing what's going on with the Chinese. But even this report that the Pentagon was willing to admit is shocking. The rate and expansion of the Chinese military is stunning. And I'm sorry, if you examine history, nations do not expand their military at breakneck pace in order to just be peaceful and for defense. I'm sorry. That's not the way it goes. The report released this past week coincides with the visit to the Washington Times by Taiwanese diplomats who said they want to renew their request to obtain some joint strike fighter planes from the United States. Taiwan recognizes that it has an increasingly important role to play in the Obama administration's pivot to Asia. Really? I mean, following his pivot to the Middle East over the past 5 years, I don't know if I would be too encouraged if I were Taiwanese about a Barry Ho's pivot to Asia. In fact, I'd be keeping my powder dry. By the way, China spends $132 billion on its military, or plans to. $132 billion in 2014. The United States plans to spend $600 billion on our military. Just to give you an idea of where we all are in the world. By the way, those numbers look very similar. China's numbers, growth numbers, look very similar to what the Germans did in the 1930s prior to the breakout of all-out war across Europe. All right, finally, from Brevard County, Florida, deputies had to break up a fight between a judge and a public defender after they had an argument. Judge John Murphy punched public defender Andrew Weinstock. The judge allegedly asked the lawyer to come into the back hallway, an area where there are no cameras and where the alleged fight broke out. Those inside the courtroom sat uncomfortably, heard the fight, scuffling, bumping, slapping, and then they clapped when the altercation sounded as if it had ended. Probably the first interesting thing that had happened in court all day. The judge, who punched the lawyer, was not arrested, and it doesn't appear charges will be filed. According to Florida state statute, punching a lawyer is considered a public service, and the judge may very well receive a promotion and quite possibly a raise. It's according to statute. You know, statute is what it is. No, I'm making all that up about that. They're not going to charge the judge because he's a lawyer. Nobody wants to mess with a lawyer. And they punched a lawyer. Judges are just lawyers who wear robes. That's all they are. They're lawyers who have ascended to the head of the proctocracy. Anyway, that's all we've got this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at American Right to Life, and PersonhoodUSA.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one more time my extremely attractive audio engineer, who provides all the sounds for the show. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.